This is the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time for a new episode of Kings of the Podcast. Buckle up, here we go!
Here we go. Welcome back, Kings of the Podcast, episode 157, the global edition. Prior to the Kings even heading down south to Australia, the global hopscotching, fresh off of his birthday, Dennis Bernstein. DB, happy birthday. Welcome back to the mainland.
Thank you, Jay. Great to be back on North American soil, but Paris was amazing. When you get to my age, Jay, and you get to the big 6'5", I know you've been to Paris before, but first time me and PJ have been here, just what a wonderful trip. All the big spots, Eiffel Tower, Louvre, Versailles Palace. It was just memorable, amazing, and we had a great time.
We haven't had a chance to connect, even though we had texted a few times while you were gone. Did you get a chance to go to the place that I told you to go and eat over by the Dali Museum?
No, I didn't. I didn't get to that museum, that's why.
We weren't lacking for
choices to eat. It was just an amazing time, and it was something I will never forget.
Yeah, well, it's a great birthday trip, and I'm sure that you and PJ had a wonderful time. We'll debrief off air, and you can give me more of the details all between all the stops. So this was the perfect time to fit in a quick podcast, though, because you've been gone. I'm getting ready to leave. I'm going to be gone. I don't know. I don't want to compare. I don't know if my trip is going to be equally as fun to yours, but it is my favorite weekend of the entire year. Anybody listening to this podcast knows that. Punk Rock Bowling, which is, for those that don't know, not a bowling tournament, at least not for me. There will be people bowling, but I will not be one of them. It's a music festival that essentially ends up being 5 days of fantastic fun. So you have Bad Religion, Rancid, and Dropkick Murphys as the headliners, but a whole bunch of other bands, including Face to Face, one of my favorite bands. So all day outside in the 95 degree weather, DB, at a music festival, and then all night in the small club shows that go on. So sleeping in late and then staying out late. So that's how it's going to work out for the next week.
When does the event wrap up? When does the festival wrap up?
It wraps up Monday night. So basically Thursday night, the kickoff party used to be Friday. The festival is 3 days. The festival is Saturday, Sunday, Monday. The festival used to kick off on Friday night, but now they've extended that. So there's a kickoff on Thursday night. So you get Zeke that'll be kicking it off along with the Dead Boys, some classic punk rock Thursday. Wow. And then Friday night, Reverend Horton Heat, Julian Ness and some other bands. That's going to be outstanding. That's going to be at a new venue, which I'm looking forward to. For anybody who has not gone, the festival is outside, and then the small club shows are typically inside. But it's going to be at the Citrus Pool Deck, wherever that is. I think it's at the Downtown Grand. I don't know. But there's an outdoor venue on top of a roof somewhere, and that's where the Friday night party is going to be. I think there's five bands. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then Saturday, all-day music festival, and then I think L7. Plays the club, and then Sunday, all day music festival, another band Sunday night, and then Monday. And the whole thing wraps up Monday night with old friend of the show, Greg Hedson, and punk rock fantastic karaoke. So, yes, Hedson will be pestering me to see if I will finally get on stage. I don't think this is the year, though, Dennis, that I will join punk rock karaoke, but who knows? Maybe I will. Maybe I will.
I thought a pass would cross because it looks like the Vegas, Florida would start on the 31st, which is a Wednesday. If they either went tonight, which is Thursday, or Saturday, back home in Vegas. But I don't think our paths will cross because we'll be doing the entire Cup Final for SiriusXM. We're going to do an hour pregame show this season, so it's going to be cool.
Awesome. Well, that'll be great. Yep. Yes, a couple of years ago, Punk Rock Bowling and the Stanley Cup final did converge, and I was able to go to media day while I was in town. I will, in all honesty, I did skip the game. I didn't go to the Stanley Cup final game because I needed to get to the music festival. But
of course,
I was late. I was late to the festival during the day. I missed a couple of the opening bands because I did choose to go to media day. That would have been, oh geez, that would have been what, 2017 when Vegas went to the final.
Yep.
First time. So that's a while ago. Dennis, this is a really big deal though, Punk Rock Bowling, because it's an annual thing that happens over Memorial Day weekend. And then because of the pandemic, everything went sideways. So basically, there has only been one Punk Rock Bowling over the last 4 years because 2020 was canceled and then rescheduled. And then 21 was canceled and rescheduled. And then it ended up happening in September. And then they took a year off. And my gosh, it's just so good to be back on schedule. You know, I like what I like, and I like it to be consistent, Dennis. So,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
And Jay, I circled this on the calendar.
Yeah. And you've been traveling a little bit. It's great to see, like, airports are jammed. I mean, there were a lot of visitors. Obviously, Paris is going to be visitors all the time, but it's just great to see people back out and around without masks on planes. It's just, it's normal. We finally got back to some normalcy. And so that's to your point about it not being normal over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years and being accustomed to stuff. It's really great to see at this point.
And then Punk in the Park just was announced earlier this week. You have Circle Jerks and Pennywise later this year. Life is great, Dennis. Life is great.
It is,
so exactly. Hockey, let's get to hockey. We do have Bill Ranford coming up on the program today. Now, there's an interesting thing about Billy, and that is that we had put in a request earlier in the season. We wanted to bring him on. We've had Todd on a number of times, but Ranford has never been on the program. And just due to some different scheduling challenges that you and I have been having throughout the year, as well as the Kings having their own challenges. And then, you know, Cal Peterson in December going down to the AHL, that kind of put a moratorium for a while on talking to Ranford. And then you had the Jonathan Quick trade, which also, and then, you know, it was playoff time. So it's been a road to get here, but really it worked out for the best, because just a week ago, Dennis, the Kings management structure changed and Bill Ranford was promoted, and now they're creating this whole sort of goalie department that's going to be headed up by Ranford. So it's great to have him on and look forward to talking with him about that and what those changes mean and how it's all going to go. Here's what I would say. I don't know how much you've been keeping up with the news while you've been on the other side of the world, Dennis, but the Kings need to add a goaltending coach at the NHL level, and they're going to add one at the American Hockey League level, because Matt Millar, who's also been on the program before, is moving from more of an on-ice role to an off-ice role. And I'm just going to float this name out there because I think we might be hearing it. We'll see if Billy wants to react to it. But Peter Budaj is somebody who has long been well thought of in the LA Kings organization. And he was cutting his teeth over this past season or two with the Colorado Avalanche organization and with the Colorado Eagles, who have become the nemesis, ironically, of the Ontario Reign. They've knocked them out of the playoffs now for 3 years in a row. But Peter Budaj is working his way into being more of a coach. And I'm just curious, and I'm wondering if that'll be a name that the Kings will target to fill that role that was previously held by Ranford. You can only imagine, though, DB, that once the news broke, I'm sure Billy's phone was blowing up, Todd's phone, Blakey's phone, everybody's phone, right? Everybody's clamoring to get their name in the hopper and be a candidate for this, for both of these opening roles, for that matter.
Yeah.
So
I actually got a text on it asking. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, they're looking on both levels, which is unusual, right, John? It's usually one guy gets promoted up from the AHL to the NHL. It's not the case. So yeah, there's two openings, and I even got some text about it. I said, yeah, go talk to them. They're looking, so we'll see.
I'm hoping it was a goaltender, though, because the thought would be that it would need to be a former goaltender that would.
It was definitely a goaltender. Yes.
That would move into that position. Exactly. Where is Jonathan Bernier these days? Because that's another question that sort of comes to mind. I think he was coaching in the Quebec League at one point, wasn't he? Do you remember that? I don't know. I'd have to look
it up. I don't recall.
Yeah, because Jonathan Bernier was somebody who was connected to the organization early on, and I know they thought very highly of, and so just have to be curious about that. So you're always looking for a connection, DB, right? When it comes to coaches, general managers are usually looking for a connection when it comes to their coaches. But here's something interesting. I'll just mention this about the Ducks real quickly, DB, and then we can move on. Sure. And we'll bring in Billy, and then we can talk about the playoffs. And both of us have wonderful predictions for these Stanley Cup finals, and so we can talk about that in the
disaster.
It's disgusting. Is that the word?
Disaster.
Oh, it's a disaster. I'm sorry.
It could be disgusting too, but I picked disaster first.
Okay. So I did put out there, just talk about the Ducks real quickly, because they're getting closer to hiring not only a goaltending coach, but really they're getting closer to hiring a head coach, Dennis, because Dallas Eakins has moved on. So did you happen to see the tweet that I had put out? I think you were traveling at the time, about who I'm hearing that the Ducks are very interested in bringing in?
No, I didn't. I see it, but I don't recall, actually.
So the name is Todd Nelson. Todd Nelson, yes, and he's with the Hershey Bears. And the reason that I find this interesting is that there are sort of two reasons. One, he was one of the finalists for the job when Dallas Eakins was hired. So that's always interesting, because I don't think very often teams circle back to a guy that they had spoken to once before, especially given that it was a number of years ago. I think it was 2019. So while it seems close, it really is a long time ago in hockey years, if you will. And the other reason that name is interesting is that Todd Nelson had replaced or took over the Oilers after Eakins left. So this, if he's hired by the Ducks, this would then be the second time that he's followed Dallas Eakins. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but Todd Nelson has had a lot of success with the Hershey Bears. And so that's something interesting. And then the other thing that I would just mention about the Ducks, I know this is Kings of the Podcast, so chill out, everybody. It has to do with the draft coming up, Dennis. Looking forward to being in Nashville and doing the 2023 NHL draft with you. We'll have to do a podcast or two. We'll actually be in the same location for the first time in a long time, DB. So we'll have to figure that out.
We'll have to bring some different gear, John. Exactly.
You said you were going to get that recording. new slim box or whatever.
I am. Okay. Yeah, that's a great reminder. I'm going to do that after I get the podcast, but we can definitely.
Okay. Yes. Get that ordered so we can be ready for June. It's coming up quick. My point to this, though, was the Ducks are picking second. They lost. They either won the second pick or they lost the first pick. I guess it can be both. It's and. Well, it
they lost the first pick, John. This year they lost the first pick, bro. I don't know.
Can we talk about all of these crazies that think that the draft is rigged? Can we dispel totally that rigged. Myth once and for all? I want to make sure. Are you in the it's rigged camp, or are you convinced it's not rigged?
It's not rigged.
It's not rigged, Dennis. It's not rigged.
It's numbers. It's ping pong. Oh, please. Oh
my God. Okay. So just more conspiracy.
The broadcast did screw up because it left out, I think, Philly or something like that when they went through, or Columbus. When he went through the card.
Kevin Weeks was reading off a teleprompter, and he gave some information out prior to going to the commercial that should have been given out after the commercial. But it's really, so people think it's a conspiracy, that it's rigged. When the reality of all this is, Dennis, that's a production. It's a made-for-TV event. It reminds me of the UFC weigh-ins. The UFC weigh-ins take place at 9 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning with nobody present except a few journalists. And then they have the ceremonial weigh-ins, which take place at 4 o'clock, and they pack the place with about 5,000 fans who come there. And it's a made for TV event, or at least it's a made for live audience event. But the actual weigh-ins took place earlier in the day. It's the same thing with this. It's done, under the auspices of regulators and auditors and, official people that can
Nevada State Athletic Commission.
I was referring to the NHL. I don't think the Nevada State Athletic NHL? Commission is there.
No. Okay. I meant the UFC.
But yes, the Nevada State Athletic Commission is there doing the weigh-ins. But in this case, somebody besides Gary Bettman, was my point, is overseeing the actual lottery. And then they have this made-for-TV event where, Bill Daly flips the cards or whatever he does. And there's a lot of drama and suspense. So my point is, it's not rigged, but the Ducks did lose out. Obviously Connor Bedard going first and going to Anaheim would have been a great thing for the Ducks organization. And Mason McTavish would have enjoyed that because they had chemistry. Where I was going with all of this is that everybody seems to, in the hockey world, have already decided who the Anaheim Ducks are taking at number two. I just want to float this name to you so we can circle back to it later. Leo Carlson is the name to be looking at, for the Ducks 100%. At number two. From what I'm hearing, that's good the call. Guy that they're looking at. Not Fantilli. So we'll see how it all shakes out. We'll do more draft coverage later. But who knows? Maybe they'll have their coach hired and the draft will be fun. Anaheim has a lot of work to do, Dennis. They are, much like the Clippers did for many years, they are living in the shadow of the LA Kings in Southern California. They want attention. They want respect. They're cleaning house over there too, DB. They're even replacing some radio and TV people. So
yeah.
And I think they're getting a new jersey as well, which has been rumored for quite some time. I doubt that it'll happen next year with this transition that's taking place. I think all the teams have been frozen from what I heard last.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're going to Fanatics, right? You know,
right, right.
That,
yep.
that caused a stir too in the hockey.
Oh yeah, holy cow!
All right,
overreaction central. Exactly.
What's that?
Overreaction central.
It's the hockey community. They overreact to everything. What do you expect, Dennis? Let's take a quick break. We'll bring in Bill Ranford. We'll talk with him, and then we can overreact to that on the other side of the break during the third period, and we'll talk Stanley Cup playoffs and our wonderful predictions and how things are looking and a few more LA Kings tidbits.
Who you gonna trust when the judge is so unjust and the jury must discuss? Say you don't look like one of us. Gonna turn. Now the court has been adjourned, and the lessons that you've learned are not as many as the bridges burn. We don't need to run and hide. We won't be pushed off to the side. What's your plan for tomorrow? Are you a leader or will you follow? Are you a fighter or will you cower? It's our time. Get back the power. What's your plan for tomorrow? Are you a leader or will you follow? Are you a fighter or will you cower? It's our time.
Welcome back, Kings of the Podcast. Summertime edition here, and a timely guest today, recently promoted, and there's some changes afoot in the LA Kings organization, Bill Ranford. Billy, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's just start with your name, first of all, because when we were coordinating this interview with the PR department, they, of course, referred to you as Bill. Todd and Blakey and everybody else referred to you as Billy. We joke with Mikey Anderson, wondering at what point he moves from being Mikey to Mike. So when did you move from being Billy to Bill, and how come Todd didn't get the memo?
I think in the hockey world, it's Billy, and then everywhere else, it's Bill.
So, are you kind of bummed, though, you know, that your name didn't work out to give you like a really super cool nickname? You know, a lot of times they just add a Y or an IE to the end of your last name. It doesn't really work with Ranford, I don't think. Ranny 40 doesn't work. Yeah. So you got stuck with Billy. But like Juice has a really good nickname. Are you jealous you didn't get a really good one?
You know what? I really didn't put too much thought into it, to tell you the truth. You know, it was, I only had probably, one nickname, and that was, I think Charlie Huddy, gave it to me, and that was Wilbur. And I don't know where he got that from, but that was the only one that I ever had with the Oilers. And that was, Chuck Huddy that came up with that one. So
good old Charlie Huddy. One of the long list of, from that era, especially former Oilers that played with the Kings as well. So, it's interesting because I wanted to delve into, I have a whole list of kind of current questions to talk to you about. But before we do, let's set the stage real quickly for those of those few people out there, Bill, that don't know your history, or we'll call you Wilbur, I guess, in honor of Huddy. But you were drafted by the Boston Bruins, which is interesting enough because you played for the Bruins before being drafted, talking about your youth hockey. And then you're drafted by the Bruins, but most people would associate you with the Edmonton Oilers. I think we can both at least agree on that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was there for a short stint. I got traded in 88, and then I think that's where I kind of established myself in the league, and then actually went there back there for another short stint 10 years later. So it was, you know, kind of a short reunion, but most of my years were obviously close to 10 years with the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, you were jumping ahead on my list of questions there because I find that to be one of the most fascinating things. Most players that are drafted by a team, maybe even developed by a team, but then eventually traded, don't get the opportunity to go back and kind of get closure. But you did get that opportunity. We'll skip over the Edmonton years for just a second. I'm curious, did it feel that way when you were able to go back to Boston, what, you know, 8 years later or whatever it was? Did you feel like it was a sense of closure for you?
No, not at all. Like, I mean, I was so young at the time when I was drafted and, you know, it was early on in my career. I was pretty naive about the whole process at that time. I think it was just happened to be a scenario where, the Bruins were kind of in that perfect pocket where they were wanting to make a push and, they needed a veteran goalie and with some experience, and that was Andy Moog, and the Oilers were kind of looking for a young goalie and a scoring left winger, which was Jeff Cordinal at the time. So the irony behind the whole thing was the trade was actually for Jeff Courtnell, and I was kind of the throw in. And then 2 years later, you know, when I'm in the net actually facing them for the second time in the playoffs, you know, the trade was Andy for myself. But in 88, it was actually, I was the, not necessarily the throw in, but I know there was one other team that they were looking at was Pittsburgh, and they're the same thing. They're looking for a scoring left winger and a young goalie.
Wow. Well, you and Trevor Moore can sort of reminisce about those being a throw-in in a trade and then actually having it work out. It's turned out rather well for Trevor Moore after being a quote-unquote throw-in in the Toronto deal.
You know what? It may have sounded like a throw-in at the time, but there was a few people within the organization, and Todd being one of them, that was potentially moving into the coaching role around that time that knew about Trevor Moore. And so we weren't surprised. You know, he might have taken an extra year or so to develop, but he's a real good hockey player.
Yeah. Before we move on and talk more current times, I do just have to ask about that 90 to 92 era there when you're with the Oilers, because something interesting happened, and I was hoping you could jog my memory. Hopefully it doesn't bring up anything negative in your memory, but for me, I have long argued that one of, if not the best playoff series the Kings have ever participated in, actually they were on the losing end of the series. Everybody focuses on 93, that seven-game series with Toronto. But that 1991 series between Kings and Oilers, six games, four games go to overtime, two games go to double overtime, just a phenomenal series. Of course, other than Craig Muni trying to break Sandstrom's leg, which we're not going to talk about today because I'll be pissed off and then you'll probably defend him and it won't work well. But you win the Calder in 1990, you're the talk of the NHL. And then game one, if I remember correctly, of that playoff series, they go back to Grant Fuhr. John Muckler, if I remember correctly, was the coach. They go back to Grant Fuhr. You didn't get a lot of playing time necessarily in that playoff run in 1991. Is that true?
Yeah, I only had one start, and that was after coming off, probably that series, and we had to go right to Minnesota. And I played game one, and that was it for the whole playoff. Yeah, I played 60 some games, I think it was, that year in the regular season. And then the playoffs started, and I was coming off the Stanley Cup Conn Smythe win, and they went back to Fierzy. And it was a real learning experience for me, after winning and then not getting the opportunity the following year. But I think it made me stronger. And Fierzy had won four Stanley Cups, so it's pretty hard to argue that. And, you know, he was still in his prime, not to go with him.
Ever the nice guy and the teammate there, Bill, to justify going to Moog, going to Fuhr. I'm not sure about that. You were coming off a Conn Smythe and a Stanley Cup. Your time was there. I always found that interesting. But as somebody sitting on the sidelines, obviously you're with the Oilers. You came out on the winning side of it. But do you think back to that playoff series at all as being a really good one, or not really, because you, like I said, you were watching it?
Yeah, it's, you know, when you're not playing, you're not as 100% in it,
right?
Compared to actually being in the net. But you know, I think the biggest thing that you have to realize was the whole Gretzky trade that happened, and playing against Wayne Gretzky, and how big that was, not only for our organization to get past that threshold, and continue to find a way to beat Wayne Gretzky, because that's the way we looked at it. You know, you're looking at the board going into a game, and Wayne Gretzky's the name you circle. That's the guy that you got to be better at. And, you know, for our group, it was always a big challenge anytime we went up against the LA Kings. So it was, we always marked it on the calendar, and I think with that series, it just showed how evenly matched both teams were and how great a series was it. But was I 100% all in? No. Was I 100% all in as a cheerleader? Absolutely.
You know, I'm going to have to get a hold of Rob Blake later today. That was right around the time period that he was coming into the league. I'm going to need to let him know that you guys weren't circling his name on the board at all. You guys weren't worried about number four.
Well, we had to worry about number four a little bit after that. Yes. That big big butt of his that hip check. Yeah, you know.
For sure. Last question on that Oilers time period. We could do a whole 2 hours on this. That's my division to me. That's fantastic hockey. Kings Oilers rivalry. It's back. And so it's great to see. However, it would be nice if maybe the Kings could come out on the winning end. I think it's 12 or 13 playoff series now and that they've played, and Edmonton holds a decided advantage. But how weird was it seeing so many former Oilers? It wasn't just 99. There were so many guys that eventually made their way. We talked about Huddy earlier to L.A. Was that weird at all? Or at that point when you're playing, it doesn't really faze you because you're more worried about your team and preparing for, you know, games?
Well, I think early on it was, you know, you can tick off the different names. Marty McSorley, Yuri Curry went over there, you know, when it was competitive, you know, so obviously, it was tough, but you know, for me as a younger player, to have that success of a cup in 88 and 90, and then all of a sudden, the slow dismantling of the organization was tough to watch and sometimes tough to play behind. But you know, their financial things come up with an owner and they got to make decisions and the Oilers for a stretch became a seller and the young guys had to learn to win and figure it out for themselves with a lot of veteran players moving on.
Yeah, let's fast forward a decade or so. 2006, the LA Kings clean house from a management perspective. A new GM comes to town named Dean Lombardi. At that time, you had spent 2 years with the Vancouver Giants as the goaltending coach in the WHL. And then somehow you end up in Los Angeles. Can you piece that story together for us? How did that happen? Who called you? What was the connection? And, tell us about how you ended up in the NHL all those many years ago.
I was basically cutting my teeth in the Western Hockey League. I had a year with Dean Chenault in Seattle, commuting back and forth. And then the opportunity came about that the job in Vancouver came open. And obviously Dean being a really good friend, I didn't want to hang him out to dry. Had a good conversation with him and said, you know, it'd be easier just being right in my own backyard, and I'd like to interview for the job. And he was great about it. So, and then just the opportunity to work with a guy like Don Hay. I learned a lot from Dean, and then, you know, Don at that time was one of the greatest coaches in the Canadian Hockey League at the time. And to learn from him was amazing. I got excited about the position and growing in the position. And then all of a sudden I got a phone call from Mark Crawford. And when I originally retired, I interviewed right out of retirement. I interviewed for the job with the Vancouver Canucks and Mark Crawford was the coach then. And he just felt that, you know, just coming out of the league, that I didn't really have any coaching experience, that I needed to go learn. And basically 5 years later, he phoned me, said, basically the job's yours if you want it. Heard you're doing a lot of good things. And one of the guys that he had worked with, Ian Clark, I'd done a little bit of work with Ian and the combination, I think, of Don Hay and Ian Clark, Crow made the decision was that I was the guy he wanted to have.
See, there's a guy with a really cool nickname, Crow. We're right back to the very beginning of the interview again. And then you meet Dean Lombardi. Do you remember your first, everybody seems to remember an interaction with Dean. He's such a character. Do you remember your first conversation with Dean?
Or lack thereof. it was actually at the draft here in Vancouver. And I got called in to interview with Dean and Ron Hextall. And my interview lasted with Dean about 5 minutes. He was distracted because he had already was set in his mind that he was going to meet with Jamie Compan and interview him for the assistant coach positions. So he had already bypassed me. He said, you know what, I'm not a goalie guy. you and Hexie talk it out and you guys figure it out. And he walked out of the room. So that was my first interaction with Dean. Typical Dean.
It's what one thing you do have to love about Dean is he's always straight to the point. He never minces words. You never have to wonder what he's thinking because he'll just tell you.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, the real funny story, though, is like I don't know Dean from Adam. So I'm like, you know, he's a little bit the mad professor. And, you know, I don't know him from Adam. And I get hired. I interview. I get a phone call that night from Hexie. From Ron that, you know, we're going to hire you, come to the draft the next morning. I meet everybody and everything. Don't really talk to Dean at all that day for more than 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, he just asked me who was the best goalie in the draft. I said, Bernier. He says, well, we're going to try and draft him. And I'm at home and during the first round and I get the phone call from the table and, Dean said, calls me, goes, got your guy, don't screw it up, hangs up.
Well, and looking back on it now, you shouldn't have expected anything more than that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And he didn't use the word screw it up. You can imagine what language.
Just can't say that here. Yeah, Dean has a colorful way of talking.
Yeah.
We were fortunate enough to get him on the podcast recently as well, and it was a wonderful hour. Last question then about the draft, at least Mark Yannetti, you know, he's been in and around the draft now. He's like you. He's one of the guys who has really stood the test of time, where most of the other management in the organization has turned over since that early 06, 07 kind of era of Dean Lombardi. Any funny, I know I'm thinking your guys' paths might not have crossed too often, but any good Yank stories?
You know, right, Yanks is a pretty straight shooter. You know, I really enjoy spending time with him, and the season where we had a little bit of the lockout and stuff gave me the opportunity to travel with a little bit. And the big joke about Yanks is he travels with a backpack.
Yeah, he has one suit. Like, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, you know, he's got his leather boots that he wears to the rink. He's got his couple pairs of dress pants, golf shirts, and depending on what weather it is, how heavy the coat is. And he's a pretty simple guy with his travel, and so everybody gets a good chuckle out of him. But Yanks does has done a good job, and we've got a great relationship, and it's an important draft for us from the goalie standpoint. We're thin there, and this year's going to be a big draft for the goalie department and Yanks.
Well, you know, it's funny because you actually transitioned perfectly into my next question, which, well, actually my next question was about coaching, but we can skip to the draft. What type of input are you able to give, right? Because Yank has a whole staff of amateur scouts that go all across the world, whether you're talking about Ruutu in Europe or even the guys, that are here, Andy Johnson and all those guys that are here in the States and covering Canada. Do you have an opportunity to give input? Do they seek input? I mean, obviously Dean asked you about, you know, a goaltender, but do they ask for your input, or is that really the impetus almost for this whole reorganization and you moving into a different role? And then the guy like Matt Millar moving into more of a scouting role, is it to be able to provide them with some additional sort of feedback on goaltenders?
Yeah. I mean, we've always done it to a certain extent, but it's an area that we feel that has to be improved on. And that's where Blakey and I talked a couple of years ago about trying to come up with some sort of system of a goalie department. And that's what we've done. And between myself, Maddie, and Adam Brown, we've worked hard at it over the last two summers, trying to piece it together and coming up with kind of a game plan. And that was a big part of the hiring of Adam Brown, as our development guy. He not only has the development side of working with our East Coast League goalies and prospects, but he's also a big part of the amateur scouting for the goalies. Mm-hmm. So he does all our draft eligible goalies for us. And then Matt does a lot of it too through video. And then at the end of the season, if time works out, he has the opportunity to do some live viewings. And then right now we're in the process of, you know, we get a list from the amateurs. We have some names ourselves, and then we put our list together and we hand it over to Mark Iannetti and their amateur staff. And that's kind of how it works. But I think we're moving forward, obviously, in my new role. I'm going to be overseeing all that, and that will also give me the opportunity. If it's a big year for, you know, we're maybe looking at drafting goalie in the first round, which is always risky, that would put me out on the road, you know, looking at the top two or three guys to help make that decision with the amateur stuff.
So should we just skip the rest of the questions and just talk about the guys that are on your list that you're looking at for the draft this year? Or maybe we'll do that in a follow-up podcast.
Yeah, that would be a follow-up.
Okay, good. You're a seasoned pro. I couldn't slip that one by you. Here was my real next question, which is, this is a weird one. Can only a goalie be a goalie coach or a goalie consultant?
I think you have to have played the position to a certain extent, yes. Mm-hmm. But is it mandatory? Probably not. But I think if you've lived it and breathed it, it definitely helps in the position.
Can you think of anybody? Have you ever come across somebody who hasn't played the position, you know, outside of maybe Pee Wee or something, but I mean, you know, a real time playing the position, who has transitioned into a coach that's had any success? Does anybody come to mind?
Nobody.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same
point. I'm sure there's somebody out there, but nobody that comes to the top of my mind.
Yeah. I have a former LA King goaltender on the top of my mind as a candidate for the open coaching position in Los Angeles. I'm curious. I know everything's moving quickly, or I'm assuming everything's moving quickly with your promotion and the restructure. How far along are you guys in the process of deciding who's going to be the coach, you know, to fill your former role with the Kings?
We're in the process of putting a list together. Once the announcement was made, we're probably, you know, 5 or 6 days in now. The list is rapidly growing. We've probably had, for the two positions, over 60 candidates right now.
Wow.
So the process over the next week or so is to narrow that down to probably, 10 guys, and then maybe even whittle it down to five in the interview process. But that's a decision that we're making next week with management.
So I'm assuming that you would do all of the interviews, and then at some point you serve up maybe the final two or three candidates, and then you seek input from the other people in management, you know, whether you're talking about Nelly or Blake or whatever.
That's what the decision is going to be made next week, what the process is. When I've done it before, I did it myself. And then the last three candidates, I sat down with Glenn Murray and Richard Seeley when we hired Adam Brown. Mm-hmm. So, obviously the big one, my position, the top management guys are going to be involved, and obviously Todd is going to have a big say in it. So, it'll be a little bit of a bigger group this time around when we get down to the final guys.
Sure. Has Todd served any guys up to you and said, hey, add this guy to your list of 60?
He's given me a few names. Obviously people are contacting him. You know, it's, the hockey business is a pretty small world. So, guys that have worked with Todd, you know, that have goalie coaches, he's obviously, getting names passed on to him. And then, you know, we add them to the list.
Talking about the current NHL, scoring is up. Why do you think scoring is up as a goaltender?
I think we're in a little bit of a transition stage right now, with goaltending across the league. Over the last couple of years, we've probably lost anywhere from 10 to 12 legitimate number one 10 plus year starters. Mm-hmm. And I think we're in that little bit of a lull. And the game's changing. I think the new athletes sometimes, isn't as concerned about defending as they are about playing offense. Mm-hmm. And when you've got two teams that are willing to play that way, obviously scoring is going to go up.
This might be a hard question to follow, but I'm curious. As a coach of a team, take Todd, for example, as an example, not specifically referring to Todd, but as a coach of a team, Todd has, you know, 23 guys that he's worried about, and he has relationships, stronger relationships with some players than maybe he does with other players, et cetera. But as the goaltending coach, you guys are so involved, and you have really two primary goaltenders at the NHL level. When you went through what you went through this year with Cal going down and then with Quickie getting traded, is that emotionally harder, do you think, maybe for a goaltending coach than it might be with a star player getting traded for maybe a regular head coach, if that makes any sense?
Well, when you've got a 15-plus year relationship with a goalie, it was gut-wrenching when Quickie got traded. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been together, you know, since I started here, so he was a draft pick at the time. And so obviously with what he's done for this organization, it's different. But it's also part of the business. You know, at the time it was really disappointing, but it's part of the business and you move on. I think the role of the goalie coach has changed so much. You're not just, you know, in that role of working with the goalies. I'm so much more interactive, eye in the sky, working with the extra players after practice, scouting reports to help out the shooters. The role has changed so much since I started. So I don't look at myself as just responsible for two guys. I don't think I'm any different than any of the other coaches. But obviously my primary focus is the two guys that are, you know, with the LA Kings at the time.
Yeah. This is a broad question. I'm not sure how you'd like to answer it, but you think about all the coaches I was mentioning earlier that you're one of the holdovers. You've been around for a long time, much like Yank. You referred to Mark Crawford earlier. You had time with Terry Murray, obviously Daryl Sutter as a head coach, John Stevens, and now with Todd. What are some of the differences working with all of those, you know, different coaches?
I think every coach that I've worked with has brought, you know, a different perspective to the game, which has really helped me grow. And, you know, I always joke around that, you know, I just found a way to slide under the radar and just, you know, keep my head down and do my work and take care of business and keep my job. And, but I think each of those coaches, you know, bring their own knowledge, their own way of coaching, but also, things that I learned, you know, obviously with Mark, Crawford being the first coach, I just learned the life of what an NHL coach is like. And then Terry Murray came in and you learn about the, you know, his focus was this team's got to learn to play defense first and then worry about scoring. And then you bring in, you know, a guy like Daryl that's all about the game plan. Let the assistant coaches coach, and he's about, you know, motivating the players and game plan. You know, John Stevens was a short time with John, but I worked with John for so many years, and just you know, he was such a great defensive coach, but also started looking, you know, at the open, even though he was so defensive minded, when he took over, it was like, okay, how can we increase scoring to take pressure off our defensive game? And then, you know, when Todd came in, just his Todd's wealth of knowledge, his success that he had in both Edmonton and especially in San Jose, and all those great battles we had against him over the years, just his wealth of knowledge that he has that he brings to the game.
Yeah. Last question here, and then we'll let you run. Certainly appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Congratulations again on the promotion. Very interested in seeing how this whole thing unfolds, you know, this new era of goaltending, drafting and developing and coaching in Los Angeles and really throughout the organization, including Ontario, et cetera. You had talked earlier about how the game has changed. And so let's just talk about earning trust, which is something that all coaches need to do with players. I'm imagining it's different today, earning the trust of players, than it might have been 10 years ago, let alone back when you were playing. Young players today, they're different, and the contracts are different. And so how does a coach go about earning trust today that might be different than back in the day?
I don't think it's changed. You know, the bottom line is you get the hardest part is about the transition from, you know, junior or college or even the American Hockey League into the NHL is the bottom line. When you get to the NHL, there's one thing that everybody has in mind, and that's winning. And at the junior ranks, your star players are your star players. And whether they make a mistake or not, you're pushing them out the door because they're your star players. You get to the NHL level, everybody's a star. And you make a mistake and it ends up in the back of your net and it becomes repetitive. You're not building trust with your head coach, and it makes it tough for your head coach to look down on the bench and pick your number to go out for the next shift if you've made, you know, your mistakes are repetitive. And I think that's the biggest thing that you got to kind of work your way up. And Trent Yanni always uses a term, you know, building up cachet, putting money into the ATM, you know, building trust with the coach. And once you get to that point where you've built up that ATM, you know, if you make a mistake, you're only pulling out a little bit of money, but you do other things that you keep adding it back in, you're gonna play. Mm-hmm. But if it's constant pulling money out, it makes it hard for the coach to put you out there.
Yeah. I am going to sneak one more in because you mentioned college, and that triggered my memory of Eric Portillo, who was on my list of questions.
Yep.
How excited to get him into the organization, obviously drafted by Buffalo. The Kings had looked at him several years ago during his draft eligibility years, but then there's a trade that happens, and then he gets signed, and now he's in the mix. And so just early thoughts on Eric Portillo here with the LA Kings organization.
Well, we haven't, in my time, we haven't had a lot of big goalies. And so I'm excited about that, you know, just having a big body and learning to coach a guy that size and seeing him use that big body to be successful and at the American Hockey League level and then onto the NHL level. So it's a big summer for him. Obviously, he had lots of success in college, mm-hmm. but you know, the American Hockey League or NHL, whichever works out, is a whole new animal. And so he's back home in Sweden where we've had some communication with him last week. He's working hard, really focusing. One of the big things we talked about him was making sure, you know, college life, you're not eating the healthiest. And so we've really focused on getting him eating healthier, getting stronger, and looking forward to seeing him at development camp and how he's come along and start, you know, getting him to learn what we expect out of an LA King goaltender.
No, it's a big summer for him. It's a big summer for you. It's a big summer for the organization. Not a bad first stop by Kings of the Podcast. We're going to have to book you for a follow-up, and we can go through your list of draft eligibles. And I guess in honor of Charlie Huddy, nice job, Wilbur.
Thank you very much for having me on.
All right, Billy, we'll talk to you later. Have a great summer. There you go.
Okay.
Bill Ranford. We'll be back after the break with more LA Kings Hockey Talk.
Welcome back to the third period of Kings of the Podcast with DB and the Mayor.
Welcome back, third period. Thanks again to Bill Ranford, or Wilbur, according to Charlie Huddy there. So we'll have to see if that nickname sticks or not. He didn't really seem to have an answer, though, on the Bill versus Billy thing, because Mikey Anderson is looking to transition into being just Mike or even Michael. Mm. So we'll have to see. I guess the hockey world still calls him Billy. But great story about Dean Lombardi as well. Always love hearing the Dean stories. And yes, Yank does travel lightly. We didn't get into the fact that Yannetti doesn't eat vegetables, but we'll save that for the next time Christian Ruttu comes on. DB, that's a long list of 60 candidates. If you have 60 candidates to go through to hire a coach, you're going to have to whittle that down just a tad.
Just a
yeah, I mean, that's a lot, right?
About 55 or 57, John, to get to like a final three. So
yeah,
but it's great. It's great to see that it's such an attractive job or jobs. I think that's the takeaway for me, is that when you get that many applicants who I assume are qualified at some level, it'd be interesting to see. But at least he's got the summertime to go through all this, and certainly we'll have somebody in place by training camp.
Yeah, I was hoping that he would have worked in the name Peter Budaj, just because, you know, it would have looked good coming out of the first period. But it doesn't surprise me that he was not tipping his hand to the number of people. And hell, with 60 names on a list, I mean, just about any goaltender you could probably think of is on that list. So we'll have to see where it goes. Couple of news items here real quickly related to the LA Kings before we wrap up today's program, talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs. I put out an article recently mentioning the fact that Los Angeles is no longer going to host the NHL Rookie Faceoff Tournament, which is a super bummer because you know I love that tournament. And you've even actually traveled, Dennis, to go to that tournament. You joined me in Arizona a couple years ago for that tournament. And I think we did a live podcast, if I remember correctly, from Anaheim when they hosted it. So you didn't get to go to San Jose, and you didn't go to the original one in Vegas. But perhaps you'll be coming to Vegas this year because the tournament is being moved from LA. You have to think it's kind of tied to two things. I'll say this unofficially. One is there were always sort of questions, I wouldn't call them concerns, about hosting the event at TSPC because they don't have a lot of locker room space. Yeah, so even though they have two NHL sheets now there, they don't have a lot of locker room space. They were probably going to utilize the downtown arena, Crypto Arena, similar to how Arizona played, all the Coyotes played their games at their home arena, and then they let all the other games take place at the Ice Den there in Scottsdale. But Crypto's going through some renovations this summer, so we're not sure how that would all fit into it. So it might not just be the best summer for that. And the Kings are now hosting part of training camp in Australia and going overseas. Yep. So this just wasn't the right year to host the Rookie Faceoff Tournament. And so last year, they were originally scheduled to host it. They ended up giving it to San Jose. Then they were going to host it this year. Now they're giving it to Vegas, which I think is cool because I went back and I pulled up the tweet from several years ago when Vegas first hosted it. Every player and every hockey executive that I spoke with that weekend, they were raving about Vegas and the setup that's there and hosting the tournament. And people were already after year one saying, we'd be fine with the tournament being here every year. So they get their wish. They've now toured Anaheim. They've toured Phoenix. They've toured San Jose. And now they get to go back to Vegas. So it's going to be a lot of fun, DB.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And it is a great facility. So and nobody's going to be upset to go to Vegas. I joked, I was on a VEASAN this morning, John. I talked about, you know, the cup final being probably Vegas and Panthers. Obviously, the Panthers are through. I said, yeah, you know, none of the media is going to complain it's in South Beach, especially when the other options were Raleigh and Edmonton, two of your favorite cities, John.
Sorry, Edmonton. It's not going to happen for you. So, oh, well. Dennis, the other bit of news related to the LA Kings development camp will be coming up right after the draft, as it does every year. They're going to have to navigate around July 4th, which is on a Tuesday. So you're just looking at development camp wise. I'm going to have an article going up soon that will talk about the status of several European players and their participation. It was really exciting last year to see Jampson come over, and the kid was flying. He was one of the better players. I think he was one of the top three players in development camp, in my opinion. I'd have to go back and check my notes. And then he also participated in that Rookie Faceoff Tournament, which was pretty cool. So there are a couple of European players that will be coming over for development camp, as well as the younger prospects in the organization. And then they usually try to get all of the players that are drafted into the development camp as well. So that's always a fun time. You spend sure. months and months stressing out about being drafted. You get drafted, and basically within an hour, they tell you that you need to be in LA in a couple of days. And so you see goaltenders who, you know, didn't plan on being there, and now they have to get gear somehow, and guys that are from Europe have to figure out how to get on a plane real quick. We've had some guys on the program that have talked about, I think it was it Andre Lee who said he had to take like two buses and sleep in an airport for 9 hours in order to get over for development camp because he had already gone back home to Sweden. So anyway, that'll be a good time. We'll talk about that on Mayor's Manor. You can look for that. But Dennis, let's wrap the program up today talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs. You took Dallas in six games in the Western Conference Final. I took Dallas in six games too, I believe. You took Carolina. I think you had him in six, and maybe I had him in seven or something. Maybe it was the opposite. So you had Carolina going to the Stanley Cup final against Dallas, and so did I. We're a pair of geniuses, DB.
Yeah, we're coolers, John. We're cool. You know, it's the movie, The Cooler. Just fade our picks. Whatever we pick for the Cup final, just fade these picks. Hopefully we won't pick the same picks. But just, you know, look, Florida's been clutch. Chucky's been clutch. Bob's been great. But when you look at Carolina and you look at Dallas, like just the lack of clutch in their game is just unbelievable. Just, they never got a goal in a big spot. So, and then to lose it on a power play goal with 5 seconds to go, both these teams have just got to do a lot of soul searching. Again, John, you know, you talked about lack of offense with respect to Carolina. They got enough guys, and they just Jarvis and Lyle's been doing good. But what came back to bite them in the butt? They just don't have enough good offensive players in Dallas. I don't know what Jamie Benn was thinking about. You know, when you really like
he fell, Dennis.
Yes, I know. Panyota texted me the same thing. I saw the laugh. He fell. His neck happened to be there, and I just braced myself with my stick on his neck.
That's not a good look, Dennis. It's really not a good look.
Ottinger sucked. It's just been. I don't think they're going to win tonight. I could be wrong, but it looks like. I mean, how are they going to go in there with any bump, any energy? I just see this as a sweep, and then we'll probably get the. Game one of the Cup final probably on Wednesday, because they're not going to wait 10 days if they sweep to TNT's not going to win. The league doesn't want to wait 10 days, but look, the two teams deserve to be in it. It's going to be a great Cup final, but really disappointing efforts by both Dallas and the Canes.
And you know what I want to say about Florida is really shame on us, because both of us really should have seen this coming. Watching Florida, you could see them building momentum. You could see it throughout each series. And my one concern was that getting past Toronto was going to maybe there would be that energy dump type thing, that adrenaline dump. And boy, it hasn't happened. But Florida, we should have seen this coming, Dennis. They were building while Carolina was – they weren't slowing down, right? But Carolina wasn't elevating. That's the word. They weren't elevating while Florida was elevating. So when you look at it from that perspective, we should have seen this coming with Florida.
Yeah, and Florida, John, you know what? 2012 Kings.
Right? Yeah, I know. People keep saying that.
Well, the goalie's there. The goalie's been fantastic. The numbers are almost the same. Barkov is like Kopitar. I guess Sam Bennett would be Brown. I don't know who Tkachuk would be, but an 8 seed, although you're right, John. Like, you got to – like, the team's playing best – win the Cup at this point, and they were playing bad. Look, I get Carolina. They're good against the Devils, but the Florida was a way different animal than the Devils were. More experienced, more physical, bigger, proven goaltender. So it's just, we should have saw it coming, but you know, kudos to the Panthers, because they really, when the chips were down, the overtime goals, it's been a great run for that team.
After the program today, Dennis, when you're finished ordering that new piece of equipment for the podcast, can you then research and figure out who Matthew Tkachuk is on that team? I'd like you to text me that so that we can have a good offline argument, because I'm not sure that the Kings in 2012 had a Matthew Tkachuk, but you figure out who the comparable is, and you can send it over, and we can argue about it via text later.
Dwight King.
Dwight King. Never trust a 74. I don't know how many times I have to cover this topic.
I know.
Clearly, Jay Woodcroft was not listening, because, 74, baby. 74. If you are a young hockey player that's out there, or any sport for that matter, and you're listening right now, if you have any dreams of being a number 74, I highly encourage you to change your number, because that is not – no. Dwight King, Kenley Jansen, Stuart Skinner, the list goes on and on. Don't be a 74. I'm going to get bumper stickers made that say that. Don't be a 74. How about that, Dennis?
That's beautiful, John. That's beautiful. I'll fly to Edmonton. Absolutely.
I'll fly to Edmonton just to stick those on cars in the middle of the night. I'll get in and I'll get out before anybody can see me in Edmonton. That's the only time I want to go to Edmonton. In terms of Vegas, though, DB, you know, it's interesting because Buffalo really, I would say, picked up the bulk of the positive media off the Jack Eichel trade this year, had a great regular season, and then now it's the playoffs. Jack's just keeping his head down and getting the job done, and now Vegas is sort of reaping the benefits of that trade, if you will.
Yeah, he's in the running for the Conn Smythe, John. He could win the Conn Smythe. Pretty. I don't think Aiden Hill will, but it's going to be either like Stone or Jack. Jack's been fantastic for this team.
Okay, pump the brakes a little bit. The matchup hasn't even been set for the Stanley Cup final, and you're already calling your Conn Smythe prediction?
Well, I'm assuming they win. If Florida wins, it's going to be Chucky or Bob, but yeah, of course I am. Dallas is not coming from 3-0. Sorry, they're not. They're not coming from 3-0. This is going to be this. I already made a reservation. Well, I made reservations in Fort Lauderdale anyway, but no, come on. Stop it. Stop.
I'm not going to Florida again with you, but when you go to Florida, I want you to make sure that you go to the Hard Rock, and I want to make sure that you go back to the club where we were, because I'm going to tweet it right after this thing. The visual from being in Florida is being at the Hard Rock, and DJ Pauly D is up at the 1-2s wearing a Vegas Golden Knights jersey. I don't think they're going to let Pauly D back in during the Stanley Cup final wearing a Vegas jersey. I don't think that's going to happen. So if Pauly D has a residency at the Hard Rock coming up, he's going to have to think about a different wardrobe. He's going to have to go back to Gym Tan Laundry or something. Can't wear the Golden Knights jersey during the Cup finals. Dennis, any parting words? Let's wrap this show up today. Anything left?
No, nothing left. Just looking for this round hasn't been. There's been drama in the conference final in the games, but when it's a 4-game sweep and a 3-0 lead, it hasn't been drama there. But I think that Vegas, Florida could be a really, really great Cup final. I'm looking forward to that.
It absolutely will be a better Cup final than anything that would have involved Edmonton. I think that's what you were trying to say, Dennis. So enjoy the sweep. Have a great day, everybody. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you on the other side of Punk Rock Bowling. After I get some rest. See you then.
The pictures tell the story. This life had many shades. I'd wake up every morning, and before I'd start each day, I'd take a drag from last night's cigarette that smoldered in its tray. Down a little something, and then be on my way.
I traveled far and wide, laid this head in many ports. I was guided by a compass. I saw beauty to the north. I drew the tales of many lives or faces of my own. I had these memories all around me so I wouldn't be alone.
Some may be from showing up, others are from growing up. Sometimes I was so messed up and didn't have a clue. I ain't winning, no, I'm over. I wear it just for